Each failure is a step closer to success. You're listening to episode 6 of Learn With Us. I'm Ken.
And I'm Nikos. Learn With Us is a podcast for developers that want to learn how to teach programming.
Today, we're going to talk about getting started as a front-end developer. So, Nikos, why would anybody want to be a front-end developer first and foremost?
It's a very satisfying career. You get a lot of freedoms. You don't need to work in an office sometimes. You can work remotely. The work is very satisfying. You can write code. You can see changes on screen. See things move around.
I kind of feel like it's the easiest, easiest way to get started in web development as a whole is getting started as a front-end web developer. So if you had a career plan of being a full-stack developer, learning the front-end is probably your best chance of quickly leveling up, right?
Yeah, you're very fortunate if you come to that realization earlier on. Unfortunately for me, I tried to learn everything at once, and I didn't really have a mentor, so it took me about a year before I got a job.
Yeah, and that's kind of the same for me. I didn't know where to start. I started off doing WordPress development and PHP, and that was only because I wanted to be able to make, you know, forums and blogs and stuff for my friends. I didn't really know what front end was at the time, but I knew that I wasn't very good at the back end.
Yeah, I mean, even once I got a job, I was still kind of dabbling in both front-end and back-end, and only the really last 4 or 5 years I really got to specialise in front-end. But nowadays, with the right training and mentorship, you can really shorten that process.
Yeah, the things that are coming out of, like, code camps or code schools, people are getting a jump start on the newer technologies. Like, they might not be familiar with the things that you and I are. You know, CSS didn't always have animations, that kind of thing. Or there was a time where HTML worked one way in Internet Explorer and a different way in Firefox, or even if you go back further to Netscape Navigator or something like that. People today, they have a pretty... they're pretty fortunate to get started today because the playing field between the browsers is pretty even.
Yeah, it's like a honeymoon period now.
Right. Everything's standardized, which is what it probably took about a good 15 years before everything to be standardized. You know, it was cowboy coding between the browser vendors. So for a long time, but everything's good now.
Everybody's got it really easy now.
Yeah. So I wrote a blog post. Oh, it's back in... It's dated as December 6, 2013. And this blog... So I wrote this blog post just as I was transitioning out of one job and into another job. And this was more of a way for me to document, like, what I know now. What I knew at the time, and looking back now, I'm like, well, I was pretty naive in saying some of the things I did in this post, but there's a lot of things that I have in this post that just are irrelevant today. You know, one of the lines is, first and foremost, do not fall into the trap that is Dreamweaver. Most people that are coming into front-end development today, they might not know what Dreamweaver was or why to avoid it. But there are different tools out there that provide similar features that Dreamweaver had. And essentially what Dreamweaver was a visual designer, and it generated HTML and CSS. So that's what Dreamweaver was. If you're getting started in front-end development and you happen to pick up a tool that says it will generate the code for you, walk away. You want to learn how to write the code. Don't let a machine do it for you. And the reason is, a lot of the code that the machine writes for you is bloat, and it will slow down the page load, and you won't be able to debug the code at all.
Yeah, back in the day, all roads led to Dreamweaver, but now they don't.
Thankfully. You know, and so aside from the, you know, the visual editor, there's different editors that you can be using today, and quite a few. It's just pick the one that's right for you. I know that when I first got into front-end web development, I settled on Sublime Text as my editor of choice. Today, I use Visual Studio Code as my editor of choice. But I know that there's other options. What kind of options are you familiar with, Nikos?
I use WebStorm. In my classes, I get all the students to install WebStorm, just even if they just want to use it for 30 days, just so that we all are in the same place.
Right.
But WebStorm, for me, it's a balance of usability and just features, really. It's a bit slow sometimes because it's Java. It has some issues with indexing all the time, but they're working on that. They're going to allow to turn indexing off. So,
and indexing, that's in, so you can search quickly.
Yeah.
You can navigate your symbols easily, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's pretty fast. You can navigate by a text search or by a file name or by a symbol, or object or variable name, function name.
Right. But so WebStorm is an IDE, right? So what does the IDE stand for?
Integrated Development Environment.
Right. So you actually get more features than just what Sublime Text or Visual Studio Code offers, because it's more of a full-featured tool that you can use to not only edit your code but debug your code, you can do a lot. There's a lot of advanced features of it. You can inspect the performance of your code or how your application's running, that kind of thing. And you get the same similar features in Visual Studio Code, but they're not just, it's not as fully featured as WebStorm. Is that right?
Yeah. An important point to note is that WebStorm has more features than WordPad.
Right. And Notepad. I like Notepad.
Yeah, Notepad, yeah. Notepad has a feature where if you copy and paste code into Notepad, it will paste it onto one line, which makes it slightly more difficult to navigate and stuff.
Yeah. And you can only have one window equals one file. It's not tabbed files like you'd get in WebStorm or any of these modern editors.
Yeah,
I used to use Atom as well. Did you ever use that?
Atom, no.
Yeah, that was another. It's a cross-platform editor that's made by GitHub. Good tool. A lot of community support. So, and it's free. That's one of the benefits of it.
Yeah.
I'm reading in my blog post right now. This is great because there's a lot of this stuff. I was like, it's not that relevant anymore today, you know, 4 years later, but actually it is. I'm reading, you'll experience or you'll find that there's things called HTML, HTML5, XHTML, CSS, CSS3, JavaScript, Ajax, MooTools, jQuery, CopyScript, and the list goes on. And then I go on to say, focus on HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. And that is to, you know, step back, learn the fundamentals, don't get tied into a framework, don't get tied into a library.
Absolutely,
you know, the
yeah.
jQuery of 2013 is pretty much the same jQuery of the 2017.
Yep.
And you can get a lot done with learning jQuery. However, it's not going to advance your career as a front-end web developer. I'd say jQuery could be reserved for designers that want to dabble in code, but it's not really for the professional web developer.
Yeah, totally. With jQuery is kind of looked down upon these days.
Yeah, and we talked about it in a couple episodes in the past, and I think, you know, jQuery is good for what it does. You know, it abstracts away the hard stuff, and it gives the developer a quick, easy one-liner to maybe update an element on the page.
Sure.
But, okay, and then, you know, in my post, I'll keep going with this post. I was pretty pedantic. I said, oh, you know, you had to make sure you close your opening paragraph tags. And to be honest, in HTML5, you don't have to close anything. You just need to open a tag. And the browsers are smart enough to know that they'll automatically close your tags where they see the appropriate block.
Oh, really? And, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, so HTML5, the difference between HTML and XHTML is that XHTML was based on XML, and everything that had an opening tag needed to have a closed tag. And then there's things called self-closing tags, like a BR, right? So a BR is a self-closing tag. You only need one BR, and it has a slash in it to self-close. But like a paragraph tag or a div, in HTML, you don't need to close those manually. They'll automatically get closed for you. However, for readability purposes and to save you when you're debugging or when you're reviewing code or anything, somebody else is touching your code and you don't want to, you know, get things out of alignment, close your tags. Just close your tags.
Yeah, that's please it. Do.
Let's see. What else do we have in this? This is a gem. We already talked about Sublime Text. Yeah, I love it. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Sublime Text, Visual Studio Code, Atom, WebStorm, all of these editors are cross-platform. So you can use them on Mac and PC, Linux even. So you're not tied to any one platform. In this post, I also said, do I need Photoshop? And I said probably. Depends on your position. Depends on where you're at. At my company, where I'm at, I have one subscription to Creative Cloud, and that's for my own use. And nobody else on the team has a Creative Cloud subscription, so nobody else on my team is opening Photoshop at all, which is kind of cool. But also, we don't. In our line of work, we don't really do a whole lot of design. So it just depends on what you're doing. We're basically using Bootstrap, and just it is what it is, and we don't really modify it that much.
Yeah, I hardly ever use I used Photoshop, like my first job, which was MoneyCorp, that was a financial company for 4 years, but then after that, the companies I work at hardly ever touch Photoshop. I had Photoshop for myself for a little bit, but I had a Creative Cloud subscription, but I wasn't happy paying £30 a month just to use Photoshop, so I went back to GIMP for my YouTube thumbnails.
Yeah, and that's true. You could use GIMP when you're working with a designer and they're handing you a PSD file. GIMP's not going to get you anywhere, but you know, GIMP is good if you're going to do your own graphics. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, but the line of works that I do, I never need to really. I'm not really working on design that much or front end stuff. I'm working on, you know, like Ember stuff and, you know, back end stuff and, you know.
Yeah, I think, you know, you and I, we might have a different experience than other developers. I think getting started, you know, as a front end developer, you might have to reach for these other tools.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe you are a solo designer/developer.
Yeah.
And that's that's common for people that are just getting into it and trying to learn as they go. You know, when I started, I did design, and actually I started mostly as a designer, and I learned development over time. You know, I had the artistic vision before I had the skills to actually write the website.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But that's not necessarily the case for everybody. I mean, it doesn't have to be. But having access to Photoshop is a good thing. And actually, previous to Creative Cloud, when I started, Photoshop was you buy a license and then you have the software forever, right? So I actually have on another laptop, I have I can't remember what version of it, but anyway, I had a version prior to Creative Cloud.
I've got Adobe CS3 Web Premium, and I'm tempted just to get a Windows Vista laptop just to run that. It's just because all the stuff in Photoshop I did with Photoshop back in the day, the new version of Photoshop doesn't give me anything extra. So it does annoy me in a certain sense.
Yeah, one of the nice things about getting the Creative Cloud subscription is that you get more software than just the one application. So say you did want to get the what do they call it, photographer package of Creative Cloud, you'd for $10 a month you'd get Photoshop, you'd get Lightroom, and you'd get a couple of other pieces of software.
Yeah.
Depending on your need, you might only ever use Photoshop, but $10 a month, if you're just kind of picking it up and learning it, you might be able to drop $10, you know, for a month and then cancel your subscription after that and just kind of just get the feel of what Photoshop's like and then only pay for it again when you actually need it. And actually, they give you a 30-day trial. I think it's a 30-day trial. Maybe it's a 15-day trial or something, a 14-day.
Yeah.
But You can try it out for free and then, you know, not renew or not subscribe, which is fine. Just get the feel for it. And then when you actually need it, you can pay for it. So which web browser should I use?
Chrome.
Yeah. Don't use any other browser. No, I mean, for my daily surfing, I use Firefox, but, Chrome is definitely like the industry standard for debugging web applications because the Chrome DevTools are feature rich and it makes debugging super simple. In fact, you can not only debug in Chrome DevTools, but you can actually write code in Chrome DevTools and it would save to files on your disk. So as you're learning how to write code, you can actually just open up Chrome DevTools and write it right in the browser, which is kind of sweet.
Yeah. I even use Chrome for debugging node code with Iron Node NPM package.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, you can debug it with Iron Node. You know, I've debugged, let's see. I think there's a node debug application or package. Anyway, you know, it's not really the topic of today, but since we brought it up, there are multiple ways to debug Node, and I've used Node Inspector, and then Visual Studio Code has Node debugging built in, which I enjoy quite a bit.
WebStorm has Node debugging built in, but I like Chrome much better.
Yeah, Chrome's was way easier to navigate.
Yeah.
So let's see, where can I learn HTML, CSS, and JavaScript? Ah, there we go. Okay.
From Nikos.
So Nikos will teach you all the HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, heavy on the JavaScript. Only if it's vanilla. So I've read a few books in the past. Let's see, what did I have? So A Book Apart has a great like bunch of series of books that you can purchase. They're probably like $15 or $20. Just look up A Book Apart. In addition to that, there's Alistapart, which is a website for designer developer types to learn new and cool topics around web design and development. Let's see, books.
Yeah, that website's been so helpful to me over the years.
Oh, yeah. I already said a book apart. So, designing with web... Yeah. Designing with web standards. That's an oldie but a goodie. Have you read that one? Nikos? Have you read Designing with Web Standards? Did I lose you? Hello? We're not gonna make it anymore. Hello? Be-doo. Boom, 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 boom. Nikos, are you there?
Yep, yep. Some dodgy internet connection.
I was wondering how long we were going to take until this picked back up. All right, I'll ask my question again. Designing with Web Standards by Jeffrey Zeldman. Have you read that?
Nope.
No? Okay. Okay. So, Jeffrey Zeldman is the... he's the guy behind A Book Apart, A List Apart, An Event Apart. He used to run a design studio and he still is in the realm of web design, but he's mostly just kind mm-hmm. of a figurehead that everybody knows in the web design industry. Okay. But Designing with Web Standards it pioneered some ideas around using semantic tags and everything's not a div and definitely not a span, but using, you know, the strong tag or using head or footer or article or aside, these newer HTML tags. He kind of put that into motion, helped move the What working group into, you know, creating standards that are readable. And then also, he's done a lot of work in the accessibility area, which, you know, screen readers can take advantage of these new semantic markup tags. Or I say new, but you know what? They're not new anymore.
Yeah.
Stuff like that's kind of old. So, I definitely would still recommend that book, even though it was originally published in like 2001 or 2002. I can't remember, but it still has value. And he's updated it a couple of times since then. So
it sounds like a good book.
Yeah. And then there's JavaScript, the good parts. It's older. It's not talking about the new JavaScript that we have today, but it still has some good points about it. Good conventions. Do you have any books that you can recommend?
Well, I'm trying to remember some of the ones that I bought back in the day. There was one by SitePoint on JavaScript, which had some weird tutorials, man, like how to build a 3D game with tables or something like that. I read some of it, but it was a lot of...
You just brought up a good kids, sit down. we used to write tables to make web pages.
Yeah.
Transparent GIFs, spacer GIFs. Oh, we did some really funky stuff to make HTML work before CSS came along. But yeah, I think that's even covered in the Designing with Web Standards book, where, you know, he's covering stuff like that, where you don't have to write tables anymore.
Yeah, we're speaking about all this stuff like ancient history, but it's in reality it's only like 13 years ago, you know, like Well, I started web development about, how long was it? Ten years ago, you know.
I first got interested in HTML in 95, and I was a freshman in high school. We hadn't had a computer in my house until 95, and that was when Windows 95 came out. We didn't have internet either, so my mom at the time, she said, no, we're not going to get internet. I don't know what that is, and I don't trust it. So we never got internet for, I don't know, a good 3 or 4 years. And then all the while, I had found a magazine that had dial-up internet trial stuff, and we had a modem on the computer. So behind my mom's back, I was dialing in into this internet provider, getting 30-day trials, and then, you know,
wow.
Technology was so slow that they couldn't catch who is doing this, like, 30-day trials, and every 30 days I'd get a new trial, right?
Yeah.
So once I got online, I started poking around at HTML, and I was like, oh, I love this. This is great. And, you know, I did GeoCities.
Oh, yeah, I did that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was into it way, way back, but I didn't get really serious into it until, you know, like 2001, 2002. And still,
Windows 95
proficient.
Windows 95 was awesome back in the day, man. Really awesome.
yeah, it was. So I never had a Windows 3.1 machine, right? I had my friend had a DOS machine, and I'd go over there and play Scorched Earth or something like that on his.
Oh, that was a great game. I had a Amstrad 286 back Lemmings. In 1990, but unfortunately nobody sat down and told me I could write programs with it. All I did was play games all the time. So I felt like I do have that regret. Like, why on earth did I not learn to program when I was a kid? Why did nobody tell me I could do it? You know.
Yeah. Yeah, so so the newer things. What are we talking about? So the where can you learn how to you know write code? The newer places that I'd recommend is first, you know, there's the online learning like Code School, Treehouse, Pluralsight. Actually, Code School, I don't know if that's still a separate thing. Code School and Pluralsight are owned by Pluralsight, so that's all one encompassing thing. Treehouse, that's a good place to learn if you're looking to build your skills over time. Treehouse has a great platform for not only like just getting that basic knowledge, but like over time it moves you through beginner to intermediate to advanced topics. And then they have different mentorship stuff built into the platform that is kind of cool. Yeah. Pluralsight and Code School. There's Egghead.io. What are the other ones? Frontend Masters has some online courses.
There's Damon Dustin these days as well. And there's tons of great stuff on YouTube as well. Just tons and tons and tons.
Oh, yeah. And, so lots of places to go find new information. CSS Tricks has a good, and they don't just write about CSS either. That's the wonderful thing about CSS Tricks is you can go and read about React, JavaScript, HTML, lots of stuff on CSS Tricks. There's a lot. My list of podcasts that is on this blog post that I've been reading is kind of outdated. So, in fact, there's two of the podcasts that are on this list that I think are still active. That I have five listed here. Go to meetups. That's a good one. Go out and meet people that are learning the same things that you're learning. You'll get more motivation to create something when you have somebody there learning it with you.
Yeah, and go to meetups and ask for people to mentor you or to just advise you on what to do, because I'm sure people will teach you.
That's one of the best things that I've ever done is, like, go out and meet people. Because when I was working at a company and I was a solo developer building WordPress stuff, I had nobody to talk to. I had not a single person to bounce ideas off of. All I had was across the hall, I had an art director, you know, a couple doors down, I had a digital producer, but nothing that was around web development. And I didn't have a support system or I didn't have a cheerleading squad, you know, rooting me on. So definitely get some sort of support, a mentor or even just a friend that's doing the same stuff as you. You know, egg each other on, I guess.
Yeah. You can learn things like 20 times quicker and for real. If you get somebody who knows is more experienced than you and to show you how to do some kind of coding thing.
Yeah, and eventually, guess what? You're going to learn something that the other guy doesn't know, and you'll be able to teach them one day. So definitely find somebody in your little community and start making stuff.
Yeah, that's why I'm doing I'm doing training. I'm moving my career into the training market because I just find it so helpful for people. You know, people learn so quickly, and it's quite satisfying to see them succeed.
Yeah, and as teachers, you and I, you know, we learn more when we go to teach something. So,
oh, absolutely, yeah.
If I don't know a subject, but I'm asked to teach about the subject, guess what? I have to go and learn every nook and cranny of that subject before I can feel confident teaching it.
Yeah.
So if you set yourself a goal and say, I'm going to present on a topic in 3 weeks or a month, guess what? Now you have to go and learn as much as you can about that topic to be confident in what you're saying. And you'll learn so much in just those 3 or 4 weeks that it'll just surprise you. There's no way to say it other than that.
I've been training the last couple of months, and yeah, it's like you're constantly learning. You're constantly learning.
I'll put this link for the blog post that I wrote in 2013 out on the show notes. If anybody has any feedback on it, you can leave a comment on the blog there. I'll take pull requests on my blog as well. So if you go to GitHub and you want to add anything to that post, definitely please do it.
Do it.
Do it. Do it. All right. Did we kill this one? We are at 33 minutes. We're good.
Yeah, we're good. Thanks for listening to Learn With Us. You can find us on Twitter at LearnWithUsPod and give us a 5-star review on iTunes. See you next week. Good stuff.